All this week, we're joining in on Covering Climate Now, a global collaboration of news outlets aiming to strengthen climate change coverage. Obviously, a big driver of carbon emissions is the burning of fossil fuels and other things, but that burning also leads to air pollution, which can be deadly. Beth Gardner has just written a book about that called Choked: Life and Breath in the Age of Air Pollution. She joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, glad to be with you.
So let's start with the fact that air pollution and climate change are distinct, but also deeply connected. Explain how they are connected.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So they are separate things and separate problems unto themselves. I mean, air pollution, the best estimates are that it's killing 100,000 Americans every year, 7 million people around the world. So I think, you know, by any reckoning, you would consider that certainly to be deserving of, you know, right, attention and concern on its own merits. But at the same time, it is very deeply intertwined with climate change. They are both symptoms of the same thing, which is this unhealthy foundation we've built our modern world on: fossil fuels. You know, so not exclusively, but very, very largely, what I found as I traveled around the world and reported this story is that the causes of air pollution and climate change overlap to a very large degree. You know, this is all the stuff that we're burning. So that's fossil fuels. It's coal, oil, and gas. It's wood as well. In developing countries, it's things like dung and other right, dirty fuels that people are using to cook at home. And it can sound sort of daunting and overwhelming to say that these fuels that we've built our modern world on are not only causing this climate crisis that we are now coming to grips with, but also killing millions of people around the world. But I think there's another way to look at it. And the flip side is that, you know, the things we need to be doing anyway, getting off fossil fuels in order to sort of try to ensure a stable climate, that those things will make people healthier and literally save lives right now.
Well, let's go through some of the things that you just brought up, starting with coal. As you point out, it's not just burning coal in power plants that's an issue. People are burning coal in many countries in their homes.
Yeah, that was something that I saw very powerfully in Poland. That's not the only place where people do that, but that was the place that I chose to focus my coal chapter on. And what I saw there is that certainly coal-fired power plants are, you know, not in any way compatible with clean air, but an actually even more sort of egregious and horrible pollution source is coal that people are burning at home for heat. And that's because they tend to get a dirtier grade of coal, cheaper coal than is available to, you know, big energy companies. It's a sort of lower tech system to just have like a furnace in your home. It burns at a lower temperature. So, you know, in Polish cities and in the Polish countryside, in the wintertime, you just feel and see and smell this very, very heavy, thick black smoke, and it has a devastating effect on people's health.
It's killing people.
Yeah, very much so. And having said that, though, Krakow is a city that is actually, you know, taking steps to change it. And when I was there a few years ago reporting on this ban that had just been passed on home burning of coal, it's now coming into effect this winter. I think it's likely to bring some relief to people there.
Well, and lest our listeners think that they are innocent in all of this, you also point out that burning wood is a big problem, not just for air pollution, but also in terms of carbon.
Yeah, that was something that really surprised me, actually, as I discovered it in the course of researching the book. You know, I think like many people, I had this notion of wood as sort of, you know, natural, and a wood fire is cozy and lovely. And, you know, certainly it's not anything as pernicious as a fuel like coal might be. From a climate perspective, you know, wood has been sort of sold to people in recent years as kind of carbon neutral, climate friendly source of particularly heat. Those claims, it turns out, are very questionable when you start to look at them. Wood is, it can be carbon neutral in the sense that if you replant the tree, you're recapturing the carbon that was released. But at the same time, the conditions to actually make that really be true are, you know, you'd almost need to be burning the wood under absolutely perfect mm-hmm. conditions that rarely happen in the real world. And meanwhile, wood smoke is very, very thick with these tiny pollution particles that are very, very damaging to our health and that are linked to illnesses from strokes, heart attacks, dementia, to premature birth and right up to premature death.
Well, speaking of burning wood, one of the ways that climate change has a direct effect on air pollution is that it's leading to more wildfires. And when those wildfires happen, they're sending a lot more smoke and bad stuff into the air.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is becoming a huge issue now in the last few years in the Western United States and Western Canada as well, where we've seen fires just getting more frequent, more intense, and the season, the fire season growing. And it's brought, you know, heavy, heavy clouds of smoke for days and sometimes weeks on end to cities and towns out west. And the air quality in places like San Francisco, you know, at times has gotten sometimes as bad as, you know, you would see in Chinese cities, which is not something that we're used to, you know, having to deal with in the United States.
Does the fact that Chinese cities and Indian cities and places in Asia and places in other parts of the world outside of the United States have air pollution that is so much worse mean that they are worse offenders or that they are just the victims of the situation on Earth?
Well, both a little bit. I mean, in some sense, when it comes to air pollution, we're all offenders and we're all victims. I mean, we all use fuel. We all use energy for getting where we need to go and turning on the lights and all of that. And that's true whether you're in China or India or the United States. China and India are less developed countries. India, obviously, much less developed than China. So they are in a phase of their development where they're dependent on much dirtier fuels.
You say that India is the third largest greenhouse gas producer in the world, and coal is 40% of that footprint.
Yeah, India is struggling with really devastating levels of air pollution. And obviously, you know, this has impact on the climate as well, because many of these fuels are also carbon emitters. But the human impact in India is really horrific. You know, upwards of 1.5 million Indians die every year from the effects of air pollution. China, on the other hand, while still struggling with a really serious air quality problem, is making some pretty serious progress. And there's been really significant declines, I think 40% or something like that in the last 8 or so years in Beijing, improvement in air quality.
And yet it's still pretty difficult to walk around the streets of Beijing and breathe freely.
Yeah, it certainly is. And in China, a lot of that comes from coal. Obviously, coal has powered their, you know, heavy industry that has turned Chinese manufacturing into such a powerful force globally. But what we have seen over the last few years is the government kind of starting to react to the fact that Chinese people, particularly the urban middle classes, have really been getting increasingly concerned and increasingly angry about the way that all this pollution is impacting their health. There started to be some response. The government's been imposing regional coal caps. You know, it's always sort of a dance between jobs and economy and pollution. But there's been a real trajectory towards cleaner air, and that has significant climate implications as well, because China is on track to meet their carbon reduction pledges, which they made under the Paris Climate Agreement, well ahead of schedule. They had promised 2030 for a beginning of plateauing of their carbon emissions, and they're likely to hit that more like the early 2020s.
Do you think we're headed in a direction as a planet where cities are going to be more like Beijing is today, or cities are going to be more like, I'm trying to think of a really clean air city that I can think of, maybe Burlington, Vermont or something like that, 20 years down the road?
Well, you know, it's a little bit hard to predict, I think, and it depends a lot on the choices that we make now. There are solutions. You know, air pollution is not in any way inevitable. It is not something that we just have to live with as a byproduct of sort of development and prosperity. And, you know, I think what you're starting to hear more and more now is a growing awareness of the need to move away from fossil fuels and towards cleaner fuels altogether, solar power, wind power, other renewable sources of energy. So I think that the coming together of those two sort of pressing needs for better health and for trying to stabilize the climate do present a motivation to governments and businesses and individuals who are trying to confront both of these problems together.
That is Beth Gardner, who is the author of Choked: Life and Breath in the Age of Air Pollution. There's much more in there than what we talked about today. But Beth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And you can find the rest of our stories on climate change, part of Covering Climate Now, at hereandnow.org.